This is Gary Parr, Editorial Director, Efficient Plant Magazine. I'm here with Bill Gray, President of Uponor North America in Minnesota, Apple Valley. It is, up there where it's warm.
Warm.
Yeah, warm. Bill, welcome.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be here.
And our subject today is what Uponor is doing on several fronts with skills gap, developing workforces, working with schools. You guys kind of have a unique situation up there in that you don't have 24-hour sun and warm temperatures to attract employees, yet you're growing at a pretty rapid rate. Need workers, need skilled workers. And you found really three fronts, developing a female program that attracts females and puts them into the workforce in manufacturing, and then developing your own apprenticeship program, and then working with schools to develop students and get them skilled, at least familiar with manufacturing. Let's look at what is it that prompted all this? I mean, is it literally don't have enough workers?
So we're a manufacturer south of the river, south of the Minneapolis metropolitan area. So our challenge is really trying to attract a manufacturing workforce, a very narrow, from a narrow band of population that kind of wants to do that work or has traditionally wanted to do that work. And we now have more competition. Everybody is growing somewhat like we are. So we really looked or had to relook at things and with an eye to being a little bit more creative. You mentioned it in the opening. When you look at your population, we were less than 1%, in fact, maybe one or two females in the manufacturing space. Yet when I went to some of our contract manufacturers, especially in the plastics business, who are also in the Apple Valley, Lakeville area, when I kind of observed on their factory floor, there was a higher percentage, almost maybe even 50 or 60% females. And I kind of went back to our operations folks and I asked, so why aren't we attracting females to our plant? We are very competitive from a wage perspective as well as benefits. And when you think about what the other options for people in that kind of band of work, retail or whatever, surely our compensation and our benefits would be attractive. So why don't we have women working there?
And so you had to take some steps. I mean, you're manufacturing, so you had to take some steps on the factory floor to make jobs more accessible to women. What steps did you take that made that possible?
So the first thing we had to look at was why are we where we are today? And when we looked at jobs, the way that we structured jobs and the physical requirements in order to handle certain aspects of a job, there may be one or two aspects of any one of our jobs that require sort of the more strength, a stronger male type, or had more appeal to a stronger male type of a worker characteristic. When we looked at taking those or consolidating those or maybe changing work practices, restructuring jobs, those kinds of things, really were able to open up a lot more jobs to people who were didn't require as much physical strength. And then it actually opened the band up for more workers of all physical kind of dimensions.
Yeah, I was going to say, it isn't just women, it's making it possible for a broader group, yes.
Strength and flexibility were two things that when you look at how jobs are classified, so again, looking at those and saying maybe they don't need, that doesn't need to be part of all jobs. That can be a few specific jobs. So again, it's being a little bit creative and rethinking the way that you do things and wondering if there's something in your current design that prevents something else, an unintended consequence prevents something else from happening. And so again, relooking at those things, reclassifying the jobs, and then also, you can have to have a critical mass of people. So not all women want to be the one or two women on any one shift. So you had to make sure that all of the culture and everything else about the job was friendly in that perspective, so that it was a great place for all employees. They felt welcome and that there wasn't, again, these kind of unintended things that stopped a certain population from wanting to work at your plant. So we didn't have the luxury of not changing. That was really the big thing. We had to change, and we had to get creative about how we did it.
Yeah, mother's the necessity.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Now, but you talk about the culture. I mean, your traditional plex piping manufacturing, fairly conventional manufacturing process for that product. And so it does become, I'm sure, starts out as really a male-oriented business on the manufacturing side. So it's unintended consequences, changing the culture, changing the thinking that makes that, that changes that environment. And yes, I can't be the only woman on the line in the shift.
And again, so being cognizant of what of all dimensions of what the employment our employee experience would be. So again, do we have equal access to locker and changing and shower and those kinds of facilities? We are very clean in terms of manufacturing, which is why we're in a suburb south of the city and not a kind of more remote, which traditionally heavier manufacturing industries are. So it is as far as manufacturing goes, it's very clean and pleasant circumstances. It's not noisy or smoky or dirty. And that's really when you go to the other part that you talked about is attracting students to manufacturing. We have to get students into our plant. We have to get guidance counselors into our plant. So working and engaging with the local community, with the two high schools in Apple Valley, and really bringing groups of people in and saying, hey, this is a manufacturing job. These are kind of manufacturing wages. This is the kind of lifestyle you can expect. So you kind of have to put it up there against college and trades and all those other things that students have choices on. And not everybody's cut out to do a four-year, English degree or a computer science degree. There's other people who are probably going to be happier working in shift work and working in a manufacturing environment. So we just have to remind people that that's a viable alternative. And that's a lot of this engagement and rethinking the way that we do things. And again, it comes back to the necessity, but it's also the type of company that we want to have. We want it to be a good job. We want it to be what we call a head of household job. We want it to have adequate benefits so that you can actually viably raise a family and kind of do those other things that work and career is meant to provide to you as an individual. So that's a lot of what we've been doing.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you're working on is an apprenticeship program where is that internal, external, both? You're one of few companies in Minnesota that is part of this government program to develop apprentices and put them through a three-year program.
So again, necessity, and I like the way you put that, another invention just kind of reminding us that something, the need starts somewhere. But maintenance has typically been a hard trade for us to fill, mostly because you're looking for trade certified people, and then you want to pull them back from the industry. You're competing from all of the industry. Maintenance people are rare in the industry as it is. They're typically cross trained in mechanical, electrical, some millwrighting, some diagnostics, some electronics, those kinds of things. So it's a very well rounded person. So to attract that well rounded jack of all trades, we weren't finding those from just ads ads in the paper, but we haven't done that for a long time, but ads on the internet or our traditional sourcing or recruiting methods. So we looked and said, what if we built our own talent pipeline? What if we, again, paved the way by, one, raising awareness that maintenance is a great career. It's a cross-trained career, if you will. You work on a lot of things across the plant, so you're not, operating only one machine or moving from cell to cell, modular type of manufacturing. It's not like that. These guys could be working in problem solving and all those kinds of things. So if you find the right characteristics, the right profile of the candidate, can we create a viable career if we set up an apprenticeship? And so working with trade schools, local trade schools, and the Department of Employment and Economic Development, we were able to create an apprenticeship program. And again, it's the creativity about thinking outside of the box. When I came out of school, one, manufacturing was a lot different than it is today, and there was lots of talent. So if I didn't want that job, then they just go to the next guy in the line and they would take. That's not the way anymore. We have to attract employees. It's almost the inverted pyramid on that. So being creative and structuring an apprenticeship program really was, I think, the right way to build our own talent pipeline, where you can train and move people through a process, and then they are obviously intimate with how our processes work, and so then you kind of create this. I would say it's harder for others to imitate and then steal those employees or attract those employees away from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in your business, when you talk about working with schools and students, the other thing that you're doing is an internship, summer job program, working with schools. Now, that has to present some unique challenges in terms of communicating with principals and school boards and parents.
Our operating philosophy, and at least the time under my leadership, has been about community engagement anyway. I want to know and I want to participate in the community. We talk about our new plant in Hutchinson, which is 70 miles to the west of where we are. We're going to create it's an existing building, but we need to put our extruders in and create a workforce in that environment. And the operating instructions that my operations team has is to engage the community in the same way that we have in Apple Valley. So that's engaging at the municipal level with municipal developments and making sure that the city understands our needs as a business, because if we're a healthy, viable business, we're also paying taxes, but we're also, there's the impact of having the employees working in that community and that sort of thing. So I just say it has to be a more holistic relationship. So working with high schools and engaging guidance counselors raises the employer brand, if you will, of Upanor. Again, we're going to compete with, there's a wide range of students that come out of those high schools, students who are going to go into manufacturing, students who are going to go into warehousing and logistics, but there's also students who are going to go through, do engineering, do accounting, do business, and all those kinds of things. We need all those skills, IT. We need those skills. We need those skills. So when they finish their two-year, four-year college, we want them to come back to the community and, you know, invest their careers with Upanor. So, and again, because we're going after the full range of capacities and capabilities in any of the individuals, I think that we're a viable career choice. But we have to embed that in the consciousness. And part of that is, again, building those tentacles out to the community. We also support robotics and support sports teams, and we do all those kinds of things. Again, because those, when you're part of a community, that's what you do.
Right. It's a culture thing where it's not, we're a big manufacturing operation. We have five job openings this week. Does somebody want to take them? It's really, we need to integrate ourselves throughout the community and make sure that people are aware that not only are we a manufacturer and an employment source, but we're also working to build the overall culture in the towns and to bring people, to help people to not only find jobs but meaningful careers right within their own communities.
And again, it comes back to an operating philosophy, which I think is somewhat impacted by my background as well as our European heritage. Being part of a Finnish company, is you just engage at a different level, and you want to create a great place for people to work, not create a place where people are lucky to have a job. And I see those as two ends of that spectrum, and obviously two different types of outcomes and two different types of employment experiences for employees. So the most costly thing that we can have as employers is a high churn rate. So the cost of training and the cost of attracting, we have to understand that and be realistic in saying those are not zero cost transactions. When somebody with 5 years cumulative experience leaves, we've got the training, we've got the knowledge that they've gained, and that walks out the door. So what was the actual cost of that? You don't see that on the balance sheet or on the income statement anywhere, but there is a real cost. And when you look at the processes that we have, there's a lot of art in getting the products out. And again, part of the efficiency, we're all about efficiency and throughput, the same as any other manufacturing. So if you let those skills go out the door and you don't realize that cost, in at least in our process, then we're not really being responsible to our stakeholders.
And I think that cost, many people just ignore it, overlook it, don't realize it's there. that cost of losing employees and that high churn rate. And if they would actually sit down and think about it, it would change the way they look at the employees, the training, retention, all of those things.
I think, again, you get back to different types of operating philosophies. Mine, as a leader of the North American operation, has been about trying to create the type of company that I want to work for. And that's embedded in what we – everything is embedded in what we do is, again, is this a great experience for our customers? Obviously, we have to create customer value, and we do that by first and foremost delivering great products that help our customers and their productivity. But you can't do that only one side without thinking about the people who make the products and the people who are responsible for driving and delivering that value. So, again, I think if you think about it more holistically – rather than just, you know, bare input cost and output cost and efficiencies, kind of the old standard accounting type of view of the world, then you will see that there is a benefit of creating a great place to work with engaged employees and all those kinds of things. So part of this engagement in the community is really just getting in front of people and telling our story. And it is a good story, I believe. We look at our engagement scores, look at our turnover, look at our growth over the last 5 to 7 years, look at what we're trying to do in terms of building into new markets and all those. We couldn't do it without an engaged workforce. It's a true competitive advantage.
And you have an additional challenge in that you make PEX piping and you need plumbers who need to install the stuff and install it properly. And if there's one trade where there is a shortage of skilled labor, it's plumbing. And you're working to develop plumbers and to train them and help them develop their own skilled workforce.
We train with our training academy and on site, probably touch from a training perspective about 2,500 people a year. Now, that's training contractors to do radiant in-floor heating, as well as training contractors on how PEX is different than what they might be using today, whether it's other plastics or traditional metal-based plumbing systems. So our training, it's something that we've been doing for a long time and that we are good at, and we believe, again, it's a part of our value proposition and our competitive advantage. We have obviously a vested interest in the viability of skilled trades, because that's what those are the folks who install our products. And again, if they don't have plumbers, then they probably don't need too much pipe. And if they're not building, they don't need too much pipe. So our piece of this is really to ensure the sustainability of our industry. And statistics, I've heard for every 10,000 skilled plumbers leaving, there's 9,000 entering the industry. Well, if we're going to continue to expand the construction market, you better have some productivity gains, or else that's not going to work. So our solution in and of itself allows for time and efficiency and productivity gains from that perspective. Our solutions, I would never call any solution foolproof, because somebody will prove you wrong. But the notion of a simple, easy to install product that is more state of the art, and I would say that's really where PEX and our connection method is today. It's better in our experience, in 40 years of experience, it's better than metal-based plumbing systems. So that, we obviously have, again, that vested interest in building that trade. So training is a huge piece of what we do. And we're looking at some really creative plumbers and, you know, small business people in the communities. And I think of one recently that I visited in Madison, Wisconsin, which there's a guy who has grown his business in the, I thought we were good at kind of the 15% per year. He's been growing at 25 to 30% per year in his market. And the way he's done that is, again, being creative. He's taking kids out of high school, putting them on as apprentices, but not those old school apprentices where the apprentice was essentially an indentured servant or a slave. Mm-hmm. These guys get on the tools right away and they learn. So they are being groomed to be job site supervisors right from the day that they start, which means that they're being brought through with a higher level expectation. And then again, a career path, which, again, not everybody wants to sit behind a desk. These guys want to work with hands, want to work with tools, want to build stuff. And so this guy's helping them do that. And he's attracting employees in a market where everybody else is losing employees. Mm-hmm. And it's, so again, it's being creative. It's looking at a problem in a different way and with a different expectation on outcome. And I like that. I think to me that's cutting edge. But if we really continue to think that we can keep the old apprenticeship models where the apprentice starts at the bottom, works up the ladder, that won't happen. That's a recipe for disasters, because I don't think today's kids will work that way. And that's why they have a high churn rate or attrition rate in apprenticeships, is because you go there and nobody wants work to suck for the first 4 years.
Right.
You don't want to do all the dirty jobs. You know, it used to be that the apprentice, you know, he did all the dirty jobs, all the, you know, and that can't be anymore. So creating a professional trade, plumbing is a professional trade. It's what I like to think of it as a noble profession. I mean, it's providing a useful service, the most probably useful service that you can in the building trades. Setting that expectation, setting that right out of the gate, to me is huge. So just telling the story and looking for a different outcome, I think, is the real important thing. But the other part of that is, you know, builders will tell you today that it's not demand that's the cap on development and the kind of the growth of their businesses. There's lots of demand, and it's the availability of skilled trades and the conversion time from a lot to a finished house that I can, you know, sell to a family or to turn over to a family. That's the time right now. And schedules are being messed up because we don't have labor to do framing and roofing and electrical and concrete and all those things that we used to kind of take for granted because you had this big labor pool. The recession killed a lot of or drove a lot of people out of that market. So it's really interesting to see the dynamic. And then again, the guys who are doing well in this market are people who have rethought models and rethought engagement of employees and again, the whole viability of the career and long-term career and those kinds of things. So when you have a long-term view, you typically take a different stance on how you're going to get there.
All right, Bill, I sure appreciate it. It's an impressive effort that you're making all the way around to develop skilled workers. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Gary. It's great to see you.